Hi, this is Carolyn Fay of the Carolyn Fay Blues Collective. This is number 0373, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it's coming to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0373. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Linda Godfrey, author and investigator of strange creatures. Her latest book is Monsters Among Us.
I was skeptical in a lot of ways. I really actually thought there was a good chance for Bigfoot. I had read a lot about that in the past. And my dad was a UFO buff and sci-fi buff, so I was kind of familiar with those things. But something that looked like a werewolf, or really was a werewolf, was really just beyond my ken at the time. I still like to kind of keep my reporter's hat on and be my own devil's advocate whenever I'm looking at something or writing about something, because I think you always have to present both sides, and that it's better to keep that little bit of a skeptic as long as it's an open-minded skepticism.
Lifestyle strategist and empowerment expert Yolanda M. Tucker talks about what's inside a woman's mind.
Neither sex needs to give away all the secrets. But yes, we do need to unlock a woman's mind, because we as women sometimes feel like men are supposed to know. You're supposed to know that I'm scared. You're supposed to know that I'm upset or worried or whatever it is. And the last I checked, you guys didn't mind read. So that means we have to communicate to you what's going on.
Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman. Book Banter looks at Canadian comedy legends the kids in the hall with. This is a book about the kids in the hall. And this review of this book about the kids in the hall is coming up soon on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0373, was Carolyn Fay, a singer-songwriter for the Carolyn Fay Blues Collective. She has 3 award-winning CDs and also hosts an online blues radio show. To find out more information, you can visit her website at carolyn-fay.com, and you can check out all the information there. There you go. Thank you very much, Carolyn, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio. The smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? We start off with a story about 4 friends that are well off the beaten path. 24-year-old Jonathan Schrapp, 27-year-old Shelby Newens, plus Nick Labes and Preston Hyde, who also is known as Bloody Ruckus. That's an interesting nickname, don't you think? We're commemorating a fellow Juggaloo. Now, for those who are in the know and are aware of it, that's the name of followers of the band Insane Clown Posse, okay? Juggaloo. Anyway, Newens told police they had been talking about blood-drinking cult rituals and decided to try one themselves. According to the Brown County, Wisconsin criminal complaint, Shelby had volunteered to let John drink her blood. John had taken a machete and made an approximate 1-inch laceration on her right side forearm. John filled up a shot glass with her blood and drank it. According to Newens, the group then started talking about severing a finger. And again, she volunteered. Schrapp used the machete to cut her finger off, she said. John then placed the finger in his freezer, where he said he would cook it later and eat it. Yeah. The group then attempted to stop the bleeding by using a car cigarette lighter, which failed. That's gotta hurt. Then they used a blowtorch. Wow. The torch, Newens said, hurt more than getting her finger cut off. Newens' mother made her daughter go to the emergency room, where staff called the police. Labes was released without charge. Schrapp was charged with mayhem and reckless injury. Bloody Ruckus was held on a probation violation. Okay, first of all, are you telling me that Shelby wouldn't have gone to the hospital if her mother didn't make her? Wow, she's 27. Wow. You know, insane clown posse is just a name, not a suggestion. Yikes. A woman was arrested on September 7th at the Italian Pizza Kitchen restaurant in Washington, D.C. She was chatting up a police officer who did not know her, and she did not know him, then playfully took a French fry from his plate. He asked her to stop, but she took another, and when the exasperated officer issued an ultimatum, she took yet another. The arrest report for second-degree theft cited property stolen as 3 French fried potatoes. Okay. They must be some really damn good fries. That's all I'm saying. And that police officer showed some amazing restraint, because I must confess, you take something off my plate, I will hunt you down and kill you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. A young mother of 14 daughters, you heard right, 14 daughters, is determined to keep going until she gives her husband a son. Augustina Higuera of Texas is just 29 years old, but she is already the proud mother of 14 children. Higuera not only beat many odds by having a large family of girls only, but she beat odds of 500,000 to 1 when she gave birth to a third set of twins. Although Higuera loves her daughter, she vowed to keep going until she has given her husband Jose, who is 30, a son. I have no limit on how many children I am willing to have. I would even have another 10 if it meant having a boy, she said. Yes, she says she loves her daughters, and I don't doubt that, but still, her comment that she is willing to have another 10 if it meant she got a boy can't be helpful to the girl's self-esteem. Don't you think? Yeah. Because, you know, you've got to tell girls the truth. And the truth is, girls can do anything. They can. Case in point, the Prime Minister of Norway was caught on camera playing Pokemon Go in Parliament, and the current speaker had previously been caught doing the same thing. Prime Minister Erna Solberg was captured playing the popular augmented reality game on her smartphone during a debate in Parliament. Solberg, leader of the Conservative Party, was seen playing during remarks from Liberal Prime Minister, or Liberal Party leader, rather, Trini Ski Grande. The Prime Minister told local news she didn't think Grande would mind, seeing as how she was caught on video playing Pokemon Go during a parliamentary committee hearing. Grande confirmed as much with an aisle-crossing tweet in support of the Prime Minister's game-playing habits. She's heard what I said. We ladies can do 2 things at the same time, you know, she tweeted with a winking emoji. Yeah, that's absolutely correct. Yes. You go, girl. Pokemon go, girl. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a Virginia teen was arrested for allegedly reaching out to a clown on social media to kill her teacher. The 13-year-old is a student at Davis Middle School in Virginia, where security was beefed up in the wake of the threats. The girl is alleged to have contacted a social media user whose avatar was a clown with hopes that the person would kill her teacher. Authorities were notified about the threat and immediately contacted the teacher in question. The girl has been charged with threatening to kill via electronic message. The arrest is one of many clown-related incidents that have made headlines recently. Boy, there seems to be a lot of clown stories out there, and a lot of stories about people looking to hire hitmen. But this is the first time I've seen the two combined. It's a weird world out there. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Linda S. Godfrey is an author and investigator who has written 17 books on strange creatures. Her latest book is Monsters Among Us, an exploration of otherworldly Bigfoots, Wolfmen, portals, phantoms, and odd phenomena. Linda joins us on the line right now from Wisconsin. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
Oh, I'm very happy to be with you today. Thank you for having me.
As I said, you've written 17 books on strange creatures. How did you first get into this?
Well, it all began when I was a reporter for a southeastern Wisconsin newspaper, and people in my own hometown of Elkhorn, Wisconsin, started this room. Well, they were telling one another that they had seen this thing that looked like a werewolf out on Bray Road. And when I looked into it, I laughed at it at first, but I found that our county animal control officer was keeping a manila file folder in that he had actually labeled werewolf, and he was keeping sightings of it. People would call in and describe this thing they were seeing to him. And when you've got a county officer with an official file folder marked werewolf, that's a story. So I wrote the story and dubbed the thing the Beast of Bray Road. That was 24 years ago, and it has never stopped since. That just launched me into this strange world of strange creatures and monsters that I never even guessed might have existed.
Had you started out as a skeptic, and how much of a believer are you even after writing all these books?
Well, you know, I was skeptical in a lot of ways. I mean, I really actually thought there was a good chance for Bigfoot. I had read a lot about that in the past. And my dad was a UFO buff and sci-fi buff, so I was kind of familiar with those things. But something that looked like a werewolf, or really was a werewolf, was really just beyond my ken at the time. And I still like to kind of keep my reporter's hat on and be my own devil's advocate whenever I'm looking at something or writing about something, because I think you always have to present both sides, and that it's better to keep that little bit of a skeptic as long as it's an open-minded skepticism.
Now, in this day and age where there's so much technology, from infrared and everyone's got cameras, mm-hmm. how come more mm-hmm. things aren't being either proved or disproved?
That's a great question. And, of course, everybody thinks every time there's a new technological invention that this is going to be the one. I personally have had great hopes for drones and drone cameras, and those new little cameras that go right on the frame of your eyeglasses and you just kind of tap it and get the photo. But the trouble is that whatever these creatures are, whether it's the Dog Man or the Bigfoot, they seem to be extremely intelligent, extremely elusive, able to hide themselves very well, fast moving, so that you can barely, you know, get a bead on anything before it goes. And they also appear to know how to beat the game cameras, which is not something a normal animal does. You know, bears and mountain lions, if they go near a game camera, they don't care. You know, they'll show up on it. I've had all kinds of things, from the neighbor's dog to raccoons, you know, show up on my game cams. But there can be prints left of a large animal and nothing to show that it tripped the game cam. So there's something different about these creatures. And then it's always problematic. Most of the time they're nocturnal, and it's much, much harder to get good photographs at night, or they're from a distance, you know, so there's a natural focus problem. So there are all these excuses, but there is just something that's a little strange about these unknown creatures, because they do seem to be able to foil our best efforts at getting a good clear shot of them.
And to that point, we'd like to think and we like to speculate that we are the most intelligent creature on the planet. That being said, the subtitle of your book has the word otherworldly in there. So, is there something about what you investigate that leads us to believe, or leads one to believe, that we're not dealing with something, per se, of this earth?
Well, not always. I mean, probably 90% of the man-wolf sightings that I receive don't portray the creature as doing anything more supernatural than giving them an uncanny stare, because any mammal can walk on its hind legs if it is motivated and or taught or forced to do so. You know, so that's not a supernatural thing in and of itself. But when they start doing things like exhibiting blue glowing fur, or vanishing, or transforming, or that kind of thing, coming out of a UFO, have strange lights accompanying them, then you start to wonder. And it's the minority of sightings have those things, but there's a growing and distinct number of them, And that's where this book came from, because I realized in the past few years that not only was I experiencing some of these things in my own field work, but I was getting a lot more correspondence about them. And I thought, well, you know, it's something that I haven't emphasized a lot in the past, although I would, you know, talk about it and as one of the possibilities. But I really feel that if you're truly investigating something and there is a characteristic presenting itself that maybe you haven't thought too much about or believed that it could be possible in the past, but if it keeps presenting itself and you don't at least explore and investigate it, you're not really investigating. You're just continuing your own biases about what these things are.
Now, some of the things in your book, I understand it also involved the fact that there are many witnesses. For instance, a woman's transformation into a wolf-like creature in front of a church congregation of 200?
Right. Yeah, that's probably the most astounding example in the book. And I met with the witnesses were a middle-aged, very nice couple. He was a Vietnam veteran who worked as a machinist. You know, he and the wife and their two children were at the best vantage point. They just happened to be in the front row of the church facing this woman and had the best look at her. But, you know, I tracked down the minister. I tracked down the history of where the church had been. For some reason, the church had been taken down exactly where it was. But I confirmed all that and did a lot of research. I had them sign verification reports saying that they confirmed that these facts were true, you know, signed their names and everything. So I got a lot of contact information for the publisher. I went to a lot of trouble to verify these people. And what it comes down to, and I've interviewed them face-to-face three times at least and talked to them more than that, is that I couldn't find a single backup fact that didn't completely check out. So, it's a fascinating story. And supposedly, the woman changed back rather quickly after being challenged by the pastor with his Bible and taken down by five elders that were up at the front of the church at the time that it happened. And so it wasn't a lasting thing, but the way that they describe that it happened is very, very interesting, because there's always a lot of curiosity as to, if there is such a thing as a werewolf, how would it change? Is it all of the atoms and corpuscles of its body? Is it like some kind of projection of thought form or of the astral body that can form itself? You know, what exactly is it? And so this incident really kind of speaks to that. And these people weren't into this sort of topic, believe me, by any chance. It was a very conservative church.
From what you've just described, anybody who's ever watched the television show Grimm would know that that's very similar to what they call voguing, which is an interesting concept in itself, albeit that's for a show that is a fictional show. Now, I wanted to ask you, based on this particular incident, the fact that it happened in a church, does that add another level to the otherworldliness of this story?
I think so, you know, because the woman, it was somebody who hadn't been a longtime member of the congregation. She came in, she was sitting in the front, and this thing just seemed to be enraged. I guess the sermon that day had been on the Holy Spirit, and it was like something just sort of came forth out from her. You know, expressing itself, and then couldn't stand against, you know, the other pressures that were put on it by the pastor and the elders.
The title of your book is Monsters Among Us, so I'm just wondering, is everything that is considered a Wolfman, Bigfoot, whatever the case may be, are they really monsters, or are they just other beings among us that want to be away from us as probably we want to be away from them?
Well, that could be, you know, and monster is kind of an ambiguous term. It can, you know, you can call everything from a monster truck to the more usual sort of 10-foot-long fang-toothed beast, you know. That. So it's the monster term is used loosely, but generally these are things that are scary, that we don't know what they are. They could be small. They could be, you know, really big. They vary a lot. Many of the phenomena described in this book are related to the upright wolf-like creature, you know, partly because that's what I survey most often. But I had a two-year field exploration helping out an area property owner where we saw traces of all kinds of things. We in the same field, we had sightings of Bigfoot, huge canine prints that were bipedal, strange prints that were like large hooves. They were like U-shaped, like something took a filled-in U and stamped it way down in the ground. And so you've got such a wide range of things that you need sort of an ambiguous term like monsters.
It's an interesting field of study and certainly an interesting topic for a book. The book is called Monsters Among Us. Linda, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
You're welcome.
Fascinating indeed.
Thank you so much. And lindagodfrey.com is where anybody can go if they want to know more.
Linda S. Godfrey, author of Monsters Among Us, an exploration of otherworldly Bigfoots, Wolfmen, portals, phantoms, and odd phenomena. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0373, and you'll find links to Linda's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey. Your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
This is your safe haven from the hard news of the day. The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for your happy place.
And still to come on the program, we'll try to get inside a woman's mind, plus Stuart Nullman has another edition of Book Banter coming your way here on a program heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We do have an Idiot of the Day coming your way a little later on in the program, but right now, more Stuff File news right here, right now. And we have a couple of stories linked together only by the fact that they took place in Iowa City. They come under the heading of Indecently Strange. Number one, 42-year-old Thomas Morgan was charged in a May 7th incident at the University of Iowa's main library when, using a men's room urinal, he turned to reveal to a fellow user that he was measuring his penis with a hand-lettered cardboard ruler. Okay, good to know, I guess. Oversharing, but anyway. And number two, 49-year-old Thomas Warren, a different Thomas, but another one from Iowa City, was arrested in September near the Iowa City home that he, naked, had allegedly trespassed into minutes before. He was discovered passed out in the grass, though his clothes, car keys, and driver's license had been left on the doorstep, along with telltale evidence that he had used the doorstep as a toilet. Wow, alcohol and a controlled substance were involved, said police. Well, I hope so, because if he was doing this sober, there's bigger issues at hand. Yes, come to Iowa for more than just the corn. 65-year-old hippie grandmother Shawnee Chasser, who has lived in a tree since 1992, I wonder if she makes cookies, is under siege by county officials in Miami who plan to tear down her treehouse by December unless she brings her property up to code. It's a full-featured, well-appointed treehouse, and she owns the land underneath, but prefers to heaven of her high perch, especially when it rains. Actually, I facetiously asked if she made cookies in her tree, but in reality, she does run her own food company. She makes organic popcorn. And no, she's not an elf. After running her car into a ditch, a Florida woman asked a Bay County Sheriff's deputy for his shoes. When he declined, she asked that he carry her. Even once she was arrested, she asked for a ride home. The unnamed 54-year-old woman had been unable to complete sobriety tests, and the deputy had other evidence she'd been drinking. For one thing, the officer said, there was the smell so strong I could smell it from over 3 feet away. For another, despite being in a place full of closed businesses, she said she was picking up a friend at the apartment complex. Yeah, you see, the problem here is imaginary friends do let friends drive drunk. An officer investigated after discovering a smashed glass door at a Delray Beach, Florida cell phone store. Burglars had shut off the building's power to disable surveillance cameras and alarms. Investigators were unable to find any fingerprints, but an officer smelled window cleaner and discovered a bottle of Windex. The suspect used Windex to remove his fingerprints from the display and surrounding area, he noted in his report, but forgot to remove his fingerprints from the bottle itself. The fingerprints match 19-year-old Jonathan Dorsey, who allegedly told police he tried to pour out the Windex on an alarm after it went off, then ran off with about 8 phones. According to police, Dorsey also said he and his accomplice weren't able to use the phones after charging them, so they threw them in a dumpster. Dorsey was charged with burglary and grand theft and held on $13,000 bond. You know, that's a lot of work for one phone call when you think about it. And by the way, how do you expect Windex to stop an alarm from going off? What's the thought process there? Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Winter Haven, Florida investigators say 38-year-old Jason Drake reported to the county probation office for a scheduled urinalysis. Drake was unable to provide a sample and had to stay until he could. 6 hours later, a 911 call came in reporting a man was going to blow up the building. The entire probation and parole building was evacuated until police determined the call was a hoax and traced it to the cell phone of Denise Martinez. That would be Drake's girlfriend. Police located the 31-year-old Martinez in her apartment, where they say she admitted to calling in the bomb threat to get her boyfriend out of the urinalysis. Martinez was arrested on felony charges of filing a false report concerning planting a bomb, and Drake was arrested for a probation violation because he failed to provide a urine sample. It's a case of somebody that loves somebody so much, evidently they'd throw everything away, said Jamie Brown of the Winter Haven Police Department. Love is blind, and love can make you do things normal people just can't fathom. Yeah, well, technically, though, the plan did kind of work, albeit for a bit. And it all comes down to, basically, a shy bladder. To pee or not to pee, that is the question. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? To many men, the inner workings of a woman's mind are a complete mystery. Is it a mystery that should be unlocked? Yolanda M. Tucker is a lifestyle strategist and empowerment expert and the author of Blessed Beyond Belief, and also Lessons Learned, My Reflection. She joins us on the line right now from Florida. Hi, Yolanda.
Hi, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program. So as I said in the introduction, a woman's mind is a complete mystery, but should it be something that is unlocked?
Well, I think yes to a certain extent. We can't give away all of our secrets, but yes, I think that we have to unlock it to a certain extent so that we can live fruitful, happy lives.
I guess the reason why I asked that question basically is because there are differences between men and women, and I find that a lot of times we don't celebrate the differences rather than trying to change people. I've always maintained in a couple that when you talk about men and women, a man is always hoping that the woman he marries never changes, and the woman is hoping that the man she marries does change.
Exactly. And so that's why I said earlier, you know, it's kind of according to what we're talking about, but we can, because neither sex needs to give away all the secrets. But yes, we do need to unlock a woman's mind, because we as women sometimes feel like men are supposed to know. You're supposed to know that I'm scared. You're supposed to know that I'm upset or worried or whatever it is. And the last I checked, you guys didn't mind read. So that means we have to communicate to you what's going on. And I just had a conversation with a girlfriend a couple of days ago, and she and I had this very conversation. I'm like, you have to tell, you know, your husband how you feel, because he can't read your mind.
You know, I full disclosure for those listening, I grew up with four older sisters, including one whose name is Yolanda, so I'm familiar with dealing with Yolandas. One of the things I've always noticed that guys try to do, when a woman seems to be upset and a man asks her what's wrong, the man, after hearing the story, will try to fix the situation. But what the woman really wants is just for someone to listen.
To listen, right? We don't want you to solve our problems. We want you to listen to us. In most cases, we want a hug afterwards. We need an embrace. We need to know that somebody's there, that there's a shoulder there for us to cry on. But we don't need you to put on your cape and go out and save the world on our behalf. That's not what we're asking.
So why is it that men are such, or women rather, are such a mystery to so many men?
Well, I don't necessarily think that we are mystery. I think that in most cases, and this is of no disrespect, but I just think men don't listen. Most women will tell you what's wrong with them. They may not verbally tell you what's wrong with them. And that's, you know, especially when you're in a relationship or in a long-term friendship, you know, you get to learn and know someone and know their ways and their facial expression and those things. So as time goes on, you get to know, you know, if someone is upset or if they just need a moment.
Okay, but this is but this is a radio program, and therefore we cannot see the audience. But I can envision a lot of people, a lot of guys, putting up their hands saying, when you hit that line, we may tell you. But it's not always verbal. It's like, wait a minute. What's the nonverbal signs? That's the part we don't get.
Well, and like I say, that takes time. It usually come over years. You know, if you see a couple like my grandparents, and they were married over 50 years, my grandfather could tell, you know, he could look at my grandmother and tell, but that came over time. He could tell when to be quiet. He could tell, you know, when to press his point forward. I mean, he knew, and that just came over time with getting to know someone. And like I say, that's not necessarily a romantic relationship. Even in platonic relationships, over time, you get to know, you know, what that person, who that person is and how they react to things.
You mentioned your grandparents married over 50 years. Is that part of the problem in today's society? Because a lot of people don't take the time. They want an instant situation. They want an instant relationship. And if it doesn't come the way they want it to come, they're instantly ready to break up.
I think that's a huge part of the problem. We are living in the microwave age, and everyone wants it right now, or 30 seconds or less. And, you know, with any relationship, it takes time. It takes commitment. It takes being able to compromise. and to ask questions. A lot of times, people won't ask, they won't ask questions. It's not even about asking the right questions, but they won't ask to try to find out, well, what is wrong? What is going on? You know, to get to learn and know people a little bit more. And like you said, then all of a sudden it's not going your way and you just want out. And that's not the way it was meant to be.
So do you believe that the secret to a man's happiness is actually understanding how women think?
I know. I believe the secret to a man's happiness is for him to be first be happy. I think that no one can make someone else happy. So I think that's the secret to everyone's happiness is to first love yourself and be happy with who you are. The next thing for a man, I think, would be for them to two things: communicate, learn to listen, and ask questions. Those are two very important parts of any relationship.
Is there anything else you believe a man needs to know in order to understand women?
I think if a man would treat whatever woman it is, whether it's his girlfriend, his wife, his mother, his sister, like they would treat their mother and grandmother, I think they pretty much have it. You know, women are still looking for it. We're still looking for chivalry. We're still looking for men to be gentlemen. And, I know the thug image is out there. Everybody thinks that's cool. But in most cases, women are looking for security and love.
I mentioned in the introduction you have two books out, Blessed Beyond Belief and Lessons Learned, My Reflection. Can you tell us a little bit about your books?
And there's also Lessons, All I Ever Wanted to Do Is Love You. Blessed Beyond Belief is my story. I go through and talk about being raised by my grandparents. Having a child at 15, raising two brothers, putting one through college. I am a junior high school dropout, and now I hold two master's degrees and a law certification. Raised my son, and he's also a college graduate, and put one of my brothers through college. So I go through and talk about just how blessed I've been over the years and what could have been a tragedy, and I think it's a triumph. Lesson Learned is just a quick book, kind of like Patti LaBelle's Patti's Pearls. You know, when I was younger, my grandmother used to say different things like one monkey don't stop the show. When I was a little girl, I was like, what does a monkey have to do with it? So I go through and just talk about different little things pretty much in the African-American community that the older people talk about and give it some meaning and some structure for people my age and younger.
Okay, but you talk about these situations in your books based on the journeys that you have taken. And I'm just wondering, especially when you talk about a book called Lessons Learned, that are these lessons people can learn? Or does part of it have to do with you at the very core, the type of person that you are? I mean, there are a lot of people who have some trials and tribulations like you have had who haven't come out on the other side in a most positive way like you have. Is not part of that just who you are?
No, I don't think part of that. Well, I do think part of it is who I am. I think because I sacrificed a lot to have the things that I have today. So yes, part of it is who I am, but it's nothing that no one else could do. They could have it as well. Will they have to make some sacrifices? Yes. Will it be difficult? Yes. But if they really, really want it and persevere and, you know, go out there and make it happen, then it's there for them.
After you turned the corner, when did you decide, you know, I've got to share my story with others?
Actually, that was really, to tell you the truth, never my plan. I was in a situation when I wrote Blessed Beyond Belief, which was my first book, where the love of my life had told me he was going to marry another woman, and I was absolutely crushed. And my life just wasn't going the way that I thought that it would at that time. And so I remember being upset and crying, and I mean, like crying, it's not running out your nose, ugly, that ugly cry. And just praying and asking God, I'm like, okay, what is it that you want me to do? Because I know that I still have purpose because I'm still here. And he said, blessed beyond belief. And I remember saying, you know, out loud, who, me? Never. And as I started to write the book, I saw, you know, how he literally made a way throughout my entire life. But I still was not going to publish the book. That was not the idea. I wrote the book to be obedient. And I submitted the book for the Florida Writers Association World Palm Literary Award.
and I happened to win the award. But when I got the judge's score sheet back, the first one I opened said, "This story must be told." And so that's why I win and why I decided to publish and share my story with others. Mm.
Now, we've been talking about getting inside a woman's mind. You are a motivational speaker as well. You go around and you talk about these things. So how do the men in your life understand you, knowing that you're a woman who talks about this kind of stuff?
Well, to be honest with you, it scares them. And it usually scares them away. But I'm just hopeful and thankful that there's going to be one strong guy out there. I'm just looking for one, you know, that wants to be in a relationship, a long-term relationship, with a good lady, a good chick.
The books are called, are entitled, Blessed Beyond Belief and Lessons Learned, My Reflection. People can go to your website at YolandaMTucker.com. Yolanda, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yolanda M. Tucker, author of Blessed Beyond Belief and also Lessons Learned, My Reflection. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0373, and you'll find links to Yolanda's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her books directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. A couple of years ago, I saw a public opinion poll that said most people are more likely to know the names of the characters on their favorite TV show than the name of even one judge on their state Supreme Court. Now, since we don't see our state's top judges on TV every day, it's easy to understand why this is true. But considering that these judges can make as much public policy each year as the lawmakers in our state capitals, it should make us think twice. Because judges on our state's top courts are so important, they're elected in most states, and many of them will be on our ballots this November. Let's be fair, judicial elections can be a mystery to many of us. But this election, let's change that. However you choose to vote, make it a point to get to know the men and women who are running to be a judge in your state, both at the local and the state level. Because of the First Amendment, they can answer your questions just like any other candidate. So feel free to ask them their views on the issues that you care most about. It's your right. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder, but here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And this time around with Stuart, it's all about the kids. Hi, Stu.
Hi, Peter. Wait. Hold on, let me tune on the guitar. You know what that is, huh?
No, because you're tone deaf.
Oh. Well, if you've been, if you watched a lot of TV on the CBC, especially around 25 years ago, that would be recognizable, tone deaf or not, as a theme from the Kids in the Hall.
Not really, because like I said, you know, that could have either been the Kids in the Hall, the theme to Batman, or Rhapsody in Blue.
No, maybe, but we're talking about Kids in the Hall because we're talking about the Chicken Lady and Buddy Cole and Dave's That I Know and 30 Helens Agree, Love and Sausages, King of Empty Promises. These are some of the best-known characters, sketches, and songs that are mostly associated with the legendary Canadian sketch comedy troupe, The Kids in the Hall. That's Dave Foley, Bruce McCullough, Kevin MacDonald, Mark McKinney, and Scott Thompson. They made their mark in the world of comedy by first creating a cult following in the Queen Street West entertainment scene in Toronto during the early 80s and mid-80s, and then through their weekly sketch comedy TV series, which ran on not only CBC, but also HBO and CBS from 1989 to 1995. Now, for Toronto-based writer John Semley, his fascination with the Kids in the Hall didn't start when the show was first aired on CBC. Actually, he got to be familiar with the kids in the hall through when their TV show was off the air officially, and there was rerun constantly on the Comedy Network. So he really gained the fascination for the group, and as he developed his career as a journalist, he made the kids in the hall one of the subject that he always wrote on a semi-regular basis, which culminated in an oral history of the group that he wrote and was published in an issue of the Toronto Alternative Weekly Now magazine before the group embarked on a series of live stage shows in 2013, and that article became one of the most widely read stories for the publication that year. Mm-hmm. So Sam Lee expanded upon this article to produce a book that offers the first and definitive history of the Kids in the Hall and what and why they have become such a widely influential part of contemporary comedy. In this book called, quite succinctly, This is a Book About the Kids in the Hall. So the book thoroughly examines every aspect of the Kids in the Hall's incredible career and legacy in comedy, from their separate origins in Toronto and Calgary to the origins of some of their most popular characters and sketches, and even their catchy theme song, which I tried to play earlier. And
he's tried.
Attempted.
And well, you know, A for effort. That's all I can say.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And the use of their black and white film segments that were used to bridge each sketch to the backstage battles and conflicts that would have permanently broken up any mortal comedy troupe, to their resurrection and attainment of their cult status thanks to their live stage show tours during the 2000s. What I found interesting about the story of the Kids in the Hall was how there were many parallels to Monty Python, the legendary British comedy group whom the kids greatly admired, but whom were somewhat adamant that they didn't want to be compared to. And when you read the book, there's the comparisons are quite bold, actually. And this book, This is a Book About the Kids in the Hall, is a book that fans of the troupe, whether you watched their TV show, caught one of their stage shows, and yes, even saw Brain Candy, and there's a great chapter on how a disaster making this movie was and broke up the group for 5 years. And they'll find it as the authoritative story of how five diverse Canadian comedians joined forces to set the gold standard of what modern sketch comedy should be like.
I was about to ask, I wonder how many people, and you could probably count them on one hand, or actually maybe two hands, have actually seen Brain Candy.
Yeah, you're probably right, probably two hands. I've seen the previews, trailers, when the movie was released, but it was 20 years ago, exactly 20 years ago.
Well, they've done well for themselves, not only as Kids in the Hall, but unlike a lot of troupes, they've done well for themselves as individuals too.
Oh, yes. Well, Mark McKinney is now in that NBC hit sitcom Superstore. So he's been doing pretty well for himself, actually. In fact, the book says that he's the only kid who's had a semblance of a successful solo career.
Oh, I disagree with that. I mean, Dave Foley was the star of News Radio.
Right.
And he's been a semi-regular on television shows quite regularly ever since.
And Kevin McDonald's been like relegated to doing a lot of voice work, but he still enjoys doing the voice work. Bruce McCullough does a lot of writing and directing. Scott Thompson, I mean, he was at Just for Laughs this past summer.
And the thing that's interesting about Scott Thompson is having done years and years and years of sketch comedy, he finally decided to try to do stand-up, which is a bold move on his part.
Oh, exactly. I mean, he's done, you know, monologues as Buddy Cole and some other characters. And also, the book argues, and very interestingly, that they're happy when they do the live shows. They're at their element when they do the live shows. And when they get together, I mean, starting 15 years ago, it's like they never broke up before. It's like, it's still the 1990s doing the TV show, but with the less tension and the less, competitiveness and backstabbing, what have you.
Good to hear. They're
on the stage.
Good to hear, because you don't want to hear that they turn into five, Sunshine Boys times five.
No, I'm not going with the finger. You're starting with the finger.
Anyway, the book is called?
It's called This is a Book About the Kids in the Hall by John Semley, published by ECW Press. Costs $19.95.
And what do you suggest in a similar vein? And don't tell me you're going to say Monty Python now.
No.
Okay.
There was a book by another Toronto journalist. He used to work for a publication called I Weekly. And his name was Andrew Clark, and by 1996-97, he wrote a book called Stand and Deliver, which I think is a terrific, definitive history of Canadian comedy, which goes back 100 years ago to the dumbbells during World War One, and going to Wayne Schuster, Saturday Night Live, Lorne Michaels, Kotko, And yes, and the kids in the hall, just for laughs, Mike McDonald, it's a terrific book.
Does it include, you mentioned Lorne Michaels, does it include Lorne and Hart? Because, you know, you got to have Hart Pomerantz in there.
Yes, Hart and Lorne, terrific hour, yes. That's an essential part of the Canadian comedy scene. Yes, it's in that book. Great book. If you could find it, read it. It's really something.
Hart Pomerantz was also a My Lawyer at one time, but that's a story for another day.
And also, he was a panelist on the CBC
This Is the Law. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So again, this week's book is?
This is a book about the kids in the hall by John Semley. It's published by ECW Press, and it's 1995.
And how can people find you, Mr. Nelman, sir?
Well, they won't find me, cavorting with the kids in dresses. Same guy's new dresses. No. You can find me in the Montreal Times. And in print, every Saturday, or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Plus your dress size is Junior Miss.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Stuart, for being on the program with us once again.
Yeah, you're welcome, Peter.
Stop it. Just stop it. Stuart Nelman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. I got a few more Stuff File stories to share with you. Plus, there is indeed an idiot of the day, but I just quickly want to say a word for Elita Hair Products of Beverly Hills. You know, many hair products contain harmful ingredients that can damage your hair and scalp. At Elita Hair, their policy is to use only great natural ingredients without harmful chemicals. All Elita Hair products are made in the U.S. and are not, I repeat, not tested on animals. They're safe, healthy, natural, and luxurious, but not at the usually high salon prices. Now, listeners of the Stuff File program, you have a special offer. Visit Elita Hair at their website. That's elitahair.com, and that's spelled ELITA hair.com. And when you purchase Elita Hair products, you can use the promo code STUFF10, STUPH10, and that'll get you a 10% discount. That promo code again is STUFF10. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0373, and you'll find the promo code and the link near the bottom of the page. Okay, back to the stuff. Sarah Brady in court to defend 20-year-old Daniel O'Donnell on a charge of being drunk and disorderly in public in Worcester, England, admitted her client was wearing a traffic cone on his head in the street. He thought it was funny at the time, she said, and continued even after police tried to get him to leave. He accepts that he did carry on with the cone on his head. The judge accepted his guilty plea and ordered O'Donnell to pay £155, that's about $200 US, in fines and costs. Now, while O'Donnell doesn't think he has a problem with alcohol, Brady told the court he intends to stop doing stupid things under the influence of alcohol. Isn't it under the influence of alcohol that usually leads to people doing stupid things? Anyway, and by the way, a traffic cone does look amazingly like a dunce cap, doesn't it? Just saying. Speaking of traffic, a routine traffic stop in Des Moines, Iowa turned into a high-speed police chase when the driver declined to pull over. Things escalated when he threw a shotgun out of the window, but when the gun hit the ground, it went off and shot out his rear tire. He got out and ran, but was quickly apprehended. Why was 24-year-old Taylor Parker so anxious not to be pulled over? Police say they found a significant quantity of meth in the car. Well, sure, he's a moron, but his aim is excellent. Yeah, anyway, it's that time of the program, folks, that you've all been waiting for. Yes, we're at the very end of the program, the last story for this week, and you know what it is. Yes, it's time once again, boys and girls, for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
We had a clown story earlier, so let's just add this one to the hopper, shall we? According to police, a woman made up a report that she was attacked by a clown with a knife because she was running late for her job at McDonald's. 18-year-old Alexandria Conley of Hamilton, Ohio, called police around 6 a.m. saying a clown jumped over a fence, waved a knife at her, and cut her left thumb. Connolly described the suspect as a male wearing a clown suit and a red wig with facial makeup and a teardrop on his left cheek. Police said Connolly was calm as she was being examined by medics, even using her cell phone to access Facebook. After an in-depth investigation, police found several inconsistencies in her report, and Connolly admitted to making up the story, police said, because she was running late to work and didn't want to lose her job. Connolly was charged with one count of making false alarms, according to police. Well, she's definitely late for work now. I mean, why, oh why, would you call police to make up a story about being attacked by a clown just to avoid being late for work? Well, one reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0373. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0373. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. A tape of the preceding program will be sent to the Radio Hall of Fame, where it will be placed under the statue of Marconi, which is kind of wobbly.